and welcome to episode 268 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who's dangerously close to being blocked by me. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Don't say that.
Of course not. You're on a very special list, Tony, of people.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Sort of people aren't allowed near schools, that sort of list, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's a... What?
Went dark.
Yeah, that went dark extremely quickly.
I put
sunglasses
on, I don't know why. I put them on because I thought it was cool to sit with sunglasses on. That's good, isn't it?
It is pretty cool.
You know what else is cool? Our guest this week.
Yes.
Yes, we're joined by a creator we've been a fan of for many years, from Catzine to Follow Me In and now her new book, Breakwater. It's our pleasure to be joined this week by a returning guest and friend of the show. It's Catriona Chapman. Hello again.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, Kat.
We've been friends for many years. We're all close friends now, aren't we? That's how it works.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We love Avery Hill.
So much so that when I bumped into Kat at Thought Bubble in the tea and coffee line, she didn't go, don't talk to me. Get away from me. Who are you?
Yeah.
She actually knew who I was. And this is also...
No, I remember that. I was actually really pleased to meet you because I'd spoken to you via Skype so many times but never actually met you. So
Had you never met you two before?
No.
I didn't realise
that. No, I've never met Kat.
And that's so weird because I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right.
That's the world we live in now. We're all cyber friends, aren't we? That's what's happening to us now.
But yes, so...
Dan's met a lot of people off the internet.
Yeah, but that's just for full sex. I know where you was going with that.
Sorry, Kat.
Look, as we've been talking for a good 15 to 20 minutes before we started this podcast.
Dan just throws a hand
grenade in. Tony teed it up for me.
Kat's listened to the show. She's been on the show a couple of times. She's listened to the show. So, you know, she knows what a bunch of degenerates you are.
Had a safe word, Kat. If it's getting bad, say ecclesiastical or something like that, and just
why is that?
Making a note of that.
That's a big word to use as a safe word, isn't it?
It's a Running Scared joke. The movie Running Scared with Billy Crystal, Gregory Hines.
I mean, that's the thing is, in every podcast I listen to, there's always a Running Scared joke. I mean, how many people don't know that? Oh dear, Billy Crystal, action star.
Yeah.
Anyway, and do you know where else you can see loads of action as well?
Comic House.
Yes. On the comics at Comic House. Lovely sponsors who are fighting the good fight in the name of independent comics. If you go to comichouse.com, you can see there's a load of titles on their database. Lots of people putting their books up on their market for free. They start selling straight away. All those boxes, because there's little conventions happening at the moment. Because this horrible bastard of a year. But
Fandome? Is that DC?
Don't get me started.
I've honestly no idea what that is.
I think it's mostly movie stuff.
It is. Look, this isn't the show for that.
No, it's not. No, I tried to look at it earlier and I couldn't find any comic stuff, so I thought I'd ask.
DC don't do that. Anyway,
this is that thing about the fact that they like all these films. It's like they fucking put DC Comics on this ass. Which is a bit kind of a stuck in the craw of it, but oh well. On we go. Comic House, let's talk about comics.
Good. Comic House are good.
If you want comics, then go to Comic House. They also have an app, a digital app, which we love. There's loads of stuff being added on there all the time. Only £3 a month subscription, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Teddy Boy, issue 8, Ty Yee's Death Note.
I'm going to read all them in one go soon, I reckon. Now, I reckon that's a cracking weird read.
What?
Because they're crazy, aren't
Death Note.
No, Teddy Boy.
I read issue 8 today. Yeah, it was really bizarre. I shouldn't have read issue 1 and then gone straight to issue 8.
Yeah, why did you do that?
you anarchist.
We've got Capable issue 2, and this got a really interesting cover. Okay. It's the concept here is really great. I don't think it needs a little bit more work to kind of evolve the idea a bit more, but I really like it. It's kind of, I think that the chap in question, he's normally confined to a wheelchair, but he gains powers that he doesn't need to. That's what's called capable. And he's running from the police, and in his shadow is his wheelchair. And just the way it needs to be, I think there's a really kind of a good idea there, but it needs a little refinement. That's for just an artist.
I mean, We had a big chat with Andy Clift over that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Still one of my favourite episodes is when he talks about the depiction of people, you know, in comics.
I've
and
not
stuff.
Read that comic. I presume issue 1 and 2 are both on the app, so I have to check that one out.
Yeah.
We've got Ireland by Tony McGee, Rain Volume 2, and then we're back onto Teddy Boy, issue 7, Political Family. So I think the whole run of Teddy Boy's on there.
Did you just shout out issue 8 and then at the end shout out issue 7?
Yeah, so I went.
So, even in your list, you're reading it in a in a weird order.
Well, you remember when you could do that with comics? You didn't have to worry about.
Oh yeah, God,
remember
those days? God bless those days. But we're now in the days of Amazing Comics and Comic House. So go check out comichouse.com. Nice, there's a 14-day free trial. I believe that the code STAYSAFE gets you an extra month free as well.
I believe so.
There you go.
Dan
said nice it, so it must be life. True. So go to comichouse.com and support them because it's indie comics and not just from the UK, it's all over the world and stuff, because people all over the world love comics and we love comics and we're here to talk about them. Yes, so strap in because we've got some books to talk about.
We're very privileged as
we
well.
Are
we're
very
one of the
privileged indeed
who've read this book. Yeah.
The fine folks at Avery Hill are releasing a whole heap of new books and they all look brilliant. There's some that I've already there's two books I've pre-ordered, one of which is by this week's guest. As we were such a fan of like her past work, and then she went and did a little book called Follow Me In, which absolutely blew our minds. And now her new book Breakwater is out. I say her new book, Cat's Right Here. I don't need to talk about it. I mean, unless you're going to talk about yourself in the third person, you don't seem like the sort of
which
person
which would be cool. Which might be a good authorly thing to do. Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
like the
maybe.
Rock.
Yeah, maybe I should start doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cat thinks that's a good idea.
It doesn't work if other people are doing it. Essentially, you're just narrating her life.
It worked. It got me in that world.
Yes. Now, obviously, it was just myself who was talking to Kat last time because the two gents weren't here for that show, so there'll probably be some questions about Follow Me In as well. And there's only so much we can say about Breakwater. We were going to give a spoiler warning, but in the 15 minute we asked like one simple question for ourselves about the book because we're very privileged to have checked this out, as well as I've pre-ordered it. But when we started talking about it, there were so many spoilers, and I'm so glad we did this before we did the episode.
Yes, had to address it really before we started recording.
I mean, don't get us wrong. It's not like, suddenly a spaceship lands at the end. You know, it's not it's not like a Twilight Zone ending, but there are things we would rather not give away because it might ruin your enjoyment of it. I suppose it's a way.
So, and it's very much a character piece and like a shot of someone's life. But without me murdering it, I mean, like, for those who are looking forward to this, Kat, just tell us a little bit about what Breakwater is and how this came about after Follow Me In.
Okay. Well, it's my first attempt to write fiction, which is quite exciting. It's quite challenging. I've always wanted to, but I was kind of easing my way in by writing the memoir type stuff because to me that comes very naturally. And I always thought writing fiction sounded absolutely terrifying. So this is my first attempt. And it's just it is still based on my life, as I think everyone's writing is to a degree. It's kind of about a job I had when I was really young. Lived in Brighton when I was doing my A-levels, and I got a job ushering in a cinema. And it's kind of taking bits and pieces of all different jobs and all different characters that I've met in my sort of working life in different jobs, different parts of the country, and just kind of mashing it all together into a story about. It's quite a small number of characters in this story, and it's just kind of focusing on a character at the start whose life is very kind of, she's quite sort of isolated, and then she sort of makes a really good friend at her job at the cinema, and then it's just kind of about that developing in maybe a direction that she didn't really expect and how she deals with it.
I mean, to me, it's like, do we ever truly completely know someone sometimes, isn't it, to me, about that friendship? And without spoilers, again, there's surprises that come along. And you kind of know a lot of people at work, don't you? We always have friends at work, but do we know them Not like, you know, not like we've been to their houses a lot of the time, and it sort of changes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very weird.
The person at work is not the person at home. I mean, I act differently when I'm in different environments. So, sometimes I've been around to people's house or been out for a drink, and they're like almost not completely different, but they act very different, and it's kind of okay. I didn't see that side of you.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily nasty, but just.
I get that, man. It's something perhaps not what we expect, and perhaps not what we always want as well, isn't it? You know, to be part of.
Yeah, and one thing that Ricky pointed out to me when he sort of read my script for this for the first time, which hadn't really occurred to me because I've always, my employment history, they've always been very similar types of jobs where they're very kind of like menial jobs, like ushering in a cinema, where actually there's a lot of standing around, there's a lot of time to kind of talk to your co-workers because you're not doing a lot the whole, you know, most of the day. And I've just recently, I've just been made redundant in my theatre job, actually. Which I was there for almost 20 years, but it was a similar job in that you had these really intensive periods of like bursts of activity where you had to deal with customers. And then you'd have like 2 hours of sitting, waiting for the show or the film to finish.
Yeah, I don't suppose you want to watch it every night, do you, either? That's
You absolutely don't.
But do you think as part of your personality that you're drawn to that sort of thing because it gives you free time to be creative elsewhere in the comics, for example, and the zines?
Definitely. I've always liked those kind of jobs because they don't take it out of you quite as much as, you know, a job that is very demanding. In fact, the characters kind of discuss that a little bit at the start of the book. Like, this is a job that is not going to, you know, take over your life. These jobs allow you kind of headspace to think about stuff and to. But at the same
and
time,
part of that is part of that is the good side of this relationship she has with this dude. Not a relationship, relationship, but the friendship. It's because he encourages her to go back to her social work studies and stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah. She's in a real funk, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's kind of not stuck, but in a bit of a kind of things seem to be on pause for a little bit for her. She's not. She's just drifting.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so he does jolt her out of that a little bit, which is a really positive thing.
Is she a little bit lonely as well, Kat? Because the way there's a melancholia to the book, isn't there? There's we get this with seasides. The British seaside has a certain quietness to it, doesn't it? She seems a little bit lonely to me. I don't know. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. I'm glad you picked up on the kind of seaside vibe thing because that was one thing I was really looking forward to trying to kind of bring across in the book, because there's something kind of a little bit weird and seedy, but also kind of atmospheric about seaside towns often. And I lived in Brighton, I can't remember now for how many years, 3 years or something. And it's a very cool place, but I was also kind of ready to leave when I left.
Brighton's a funny place because it has that cool vibe in parts of it, but it's very much old school seaside town in other parts, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. So all my kind of like landscape and cityscape pages where I just did some sort of scenes of the city and streets and things. I wanted to try and create that atmosphere of seaside.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because that's what you do for people who will read it, I'm sure, soon, is you break up sections of the book by using single page wordless views of the seaside or alleyways or, you know, the little booths they have on the beach there, the beach
and
huts
and all
stuff like that.
Absolutely stunning. Yeah. I mean, I know sometimes they like, I mean, I think if you haven't already, and forgive me if you've already set this up, but I think a set of like A4 prints of all of those pages, I mean, that's any one of those pages, put them in a frame, put it on your wall. They're stunning.
And it suits the black and white, I think, as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a real mood setting sort of piece.
Yeah.
Whether it be like, you know, just Brighton itself or, you know, the Cove or like the really atmospheric sort of broken down theatre with like sort of doves. I wanted to say seagulls, but they're on the cover. They're the cover star.
It's a Lynchian quality to it. The discovery of that extra theatre and the quietness of it all. There's a hauntingness to it, I think, isn't there? As well, a bit, Kat.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad all that's sort of come across.
Right.
After doing Follow Me In Colour, and I was talking to Ricky about this, but we both said right away that it seemed like a black and white kind of book.
Right.
And I think it has a little bit of a noirish atmosphere, or like a Lynchian feel a little bit.
Seaside noir has a real, that sounds good to me. I like that. Yeah.
There's a sequence where they go up into the, I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's a sequence they go above the cinema, and there's a whole floor unused, isn't there? And it's kind of got beautiful art deco, I believe. Is that kind of like in any way a metaphor for the characters, of them kind of getting to know one another in a sense?
Yeah, definitely. In that I kind of saw it as possibly that it has this huge kind of area that's all derelict, maybe was a reflection of how the main character Chris, you know, has this potential that she's not really, you know, using. So that's the way I saw it, but it is also just based on reality. The cinema job I did when I lived in Brighton did have this whole, you know, several floors of ballrooms.
We'd want to run a zine fair there now, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
We'd want to
The beauty of art, though, isn't it? I mean, it's certainly what over the past like half an hour we've been talking, the discussion about this book has just absolutely blossomed into all the different layers that you could just read this story for pretty much, you know, just a slice of life kind of story. I was saying to the guys before, it almost felt like a Mike Lee sort of film
to me.
Yeah, that's right. The kind of naturalism. I really like storytelling that is quite simple like that and realistic. I think Ricky likened it. He did a tweet yesterday likening it to Clarks, the movie, which
I love Clarks. I'll be honest with you, Kat. When I was reading it, we all read it kind of at the same time, the three of us, or we reread it. I was reading it and I thought, this is quiet and it's slow and there's a soap opera quality to it. And then there's two things happen, which are the two things we talked about before we came on air, and they stayed with me. Certainly the last one stayed with me overnight, and I've still been thinking about it this morning. And I was saying to the boys that moment where she does something really stuck with me. And it's not a big thing. It's not like a, you know, she doesn't abscale down a mountain or something. You know, she does something very small, but it has a lot of meaning.
I'm really happy to hear that, because I did imagine that being a moment that maybe people would feel divided about, you know, whether right or wrong, or it's like
does she have to be, isn't it? You know, she just has to be herself, doesn't she? I think is the point. I mean, is she you? Is there a little bit of you in there somewhere?
I don't intend her to be me, but she is obviously very like me.
But cool. the other character purely because, like you say, it's your first foray into fiction. Do you think possibly as you move, this has been a positive experience for you, I'm guessing, like, you know, and the results show it, but you will edge further and further away from yourself with each book that, you know, fiction book that comes forward?
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. I have no idea what I'm going to do next. So.
Well, there's a John Wick poster I see on one of the pages. So I want to see you do an adaptation of John Wick.
We're always looking for artists for Atomic Hercules. The other character I really like, mate, I have to say, is it, who's the young kid? Is it Craig? I forget his name. It's gone off in my head. Craig's so real. Oh my god! He's exactly like someone I know. He's a kid who sort of failed he ducked out of school before his exams, and he's a bit lost, and his family have been trying to get him to join the army, and he just sort of hangs about and mucks about, doesn't he, really, at this theatre. Everyone sort of puts up with
I mean, I felt like all the co-worker characters are kind of like combinations of people that I've worked with over the years, and I've had so many jobs where there's been a kind of annoying young kid. You start feeling a bit protective over.
He does grow. He changes, doesn't he? Because he starts off by saying, "Did you know he was gay?" Because he thought he was being brilliant and outrageous.
Yeah.
But you, by the end of it, you understand him a bit more, don't you? Which is, I think do you like have a little sort of plan out for the growth of characters and stuff like that? Do you think about that a lot, or does it come organically?
It seemed to sort of come organically with this one.
Right.
Yeah, I was mostly focused on the two main characters and what their arc would be. And then the others just kind of started to flesh out as I wrote it. And it's always really satisfying when a character, when that happens, when you're like, oh yeah, this really makes sense now that this happens to him and that he says this.
Did you plot out the main arc for just the main two people, like beginning, middle and end, and then pad it out as it went on? Because sometimes that's the danger. It seems like a good strategy, because sometimes if you're trying to introduce these characters as you're working through it, you might like the character too much and it might diverge what you're trying to do with the main story, mightn't it? So, did the supporting cast change anything about the main story as you were writing it?
Not really. I mean, no.
Yeah.
They're very much kind of in the background, but they're also really useful in the way that they help kind of shape, you know, what's happening with the main two characters.
Yeah. And a lot of it is interactions, isn't it? I must say, like, there's a lot of dialogue in your books, and you're very good at dialogue and like interactions that feel natural and real.
Nobody speaks too much. Nobody speaks in paragraphs, which I think there's a real art to dialogue and making it sound naturalistic, isn't there? You know.
Yeah.
Oh god, yeah, because I type my script out first, and so the tendency is to type loads, and then when you come to actually start to put it on the page, you're like, oh god, no, sentences have to be cut in half.
I'm always cutting stuff off when I'm putting it on pages.
Yeah,
it's like, don't need that word. Well, how can I make that shorter? And constantly trying to cut it down to, because people talk and I just did it there, two sentences that didn't finish.
People are often short of words, aren't they? We don't have to do a lot of things, and a lot of things into the way we act as well. Was it like 60% of communication is body language, isn't it, or something?
Which is great for an audio medium.
I'm doing now.
Yeah, with your scripts though, Kat, I mean, let's say this off the bat, people, this is a 160 page book.
This is no short effort.
This isn't just a little one shot, you know. Kat does proper graphic novels. It's just, yeah, so fair play that you're putting these out at this sort of quality. But how do you write like your page short scripts as well, because with that dialogue in mind, because it feels very naturalistic, but do you write the dialogue and then break it down to panels? Because sometimes you have quite a few panels on a page, don't you? It all feels very structured.
They not always have words in them, do they?
I tend to, someone else was asking me this the other day. I was trying to think how to describe it. I tend to, I have little small pieces of paper, and I have a rough idea of a grid, like, I don't know, like an 8-panel grid or a 9-panel grid or whatever. And I kind of work, I draw panels on each of these little pieces of paper as I go and work out what's going to be said across the space of one page. And then I type it up as I go. So I'm simultaneously drawing panels onto a little piece of paper to see what might fit onto one page, and then onto the next page when the page turns. And then I'm also typing up just in a Word document as I go what's actually being said. I don't really do a lot of sketching as such at that stage. Okay. I'm just working out how it's going to unfold across the pages. And then I usually just get Ricky from Avery Hill to cut loads of it out.
You get an edit at that point.
He does a big edit once I've done a first draft. He just chops loads of it out, which I'm very happy about, because the less I have to draw.
it's funny, you know, mate, because I can't remember if it was at the launch of Follow Me In, but I remember saying to you, what's next? And you said, well, Ricky keeps saying to me I should write something about my days in the theatre because so many things happen.
Mm.
And I suppose did this sort of generate out of that? Did it evolve out of that?
Yeah, I had a really vague idea for this story around the same time that I started working on Follow Me In. And I just decided to do Follow Me In first because I'd wanted to do that for so long. But I had this idea for a story rattling around for ages, and I just, I didn't feel like I really knew how to write a fiction book. But once I'd done Follow Me In, I think I learned some stuff from it, because when I sat down to do this, it did come together a bit more easily than when I'd first tried. So
I think a lot can be said that you know, this is a work of fiction, and it will probably surprise a lot of people because it feels so natural and real that people may think it is essentially autobiographical. There is a You know, yeah. So that speaks volumes to, you know, to what you've managed to incorporate in this. And also, there's a real atmosphere to this book. And a lot of it's down to obviously the gorgeous artwork, and we talked about the one pages, but there's, and I just look, like, I was just flicking through the PDF as you were talking about, like, your panel, you know, you work to an 8-panel grid, for instance, on your pages. And as I'm looking through it, I can see that sort of grid you're working to. It's not the same on every page, but I can see your sort of, like, you know, the height of the panels and the way they're broken up and stuff. And then it just makes those pages, when you change to, you know, 3 panels or a splash page, they just pop even more, doesn't it? There's a rhythm. I mean, did you bear that in mind, thinking, right, I'm going to have this sort of structure, and then this is an important page, so I'm going to mix it up here?
Yeah, a little bit, definitely. And then also when I came to do a second draft, yeah, there were points where Ricky had said, you know, maybe we'll cut this scene, but if you can expand the next one.
Okay.
Also then trying to stick to it, we'd decided 160 pages and trying to stick to that. So, you know, if you cut something, you've got one more page or 2 more pages. So you can sometimes think, well, this one moment I could now do some bigger panels or something because this is important.
Yeah.
I find I have to have a basic grid structure when I start. Otherwise, I don't really know what I'm doing. But it is nice to then get away from it at points.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does make it for a nice flow throughout the book. There's no kind of like...
I never felt I was moving between panels, which I say is always a good description of a good comic, because it flows so naturally between... It's like it's almost in your head. It's an animation, isn't it?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some of the things when, like, there's a moment where the two main characters go up to the roof and have a drink. It's kind of one of the things that it kind of captures that thing of the seaside, of having the enormity of the ocean and the sea, and it sort of frames any problems you have as being a lot smaller than they are when you have the juxtaposition of the massive.
Yeah, I'm a big lover of the sea in movies as well. Is it Kitano Takeshi uses the sea in nearly everything he does? Because he just, there's that moment, is that you can look out and it gives that grandeur, it gives that quietness. Yeah. There's all sorts of things you grab from that, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah. And there's a scene at the end where she's just sitting in her car looking at the sea. That's quite sad. There is something quite melancholy about the sea, especially when it's a kind of a crappy car park.
in a grey sea.
Yeah. I've had so many memories. You guys might be the same, where you've gone to the coast with family and the weather's been shite and you're in a car, or it's raining and grey. It's like,
I think it's one of the reasons that Kingdom works so well, because it brings that feeling out.
It does. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it kind of heightens the fact that we're supposed to be here having a good time and we're not having a good time, which makes it even worse.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But it's kind of like gone around sort of in full circle, being a father now and taking my son and my wife. We've been down to like Hastings for the day and we had like a similar day. And I was like, I got a feeling I know what my boy's going through now because I went through this. Like,
Reading the same comic on the back seat of the car 400 times. Yeah.
I really felt for the mother in that scene where she takes the daughter to the cave that she remembered being really magical when she was a kid, and it's all full of rubbish.
I know I mentioned it to you before we press record, Kat, but I also want to ask you about... because this is slightly autobiographical, there is an element of it in there, you know, as you've spoken about. How do you feel about, is that, you said you're consciously moving away from that now. Did you find that you'd given enough of yourself out? Because I know you've done the Kat zine, obviously, about you. And you do a YouTube show as well. Do you find that you need to step away perhaps from yourself occasionally, and that's why it's moving towards fiction, or?
A little bit. I don't feel like I have to, but I don't know, it's just writing fiction is something I've always wanted to do, so I'm really happy that I've managed to do this book, and just something I want to do more of if I can come up with another idea.
Something you needed to, is like an itch you needed to scratch, you need to see, is it you pushing yourself, is that something you want to?
Definitely, because I don't find it easy coming up with story ideas, but that's usually my main stumbling block.
Was it? I know we had a conversation before about you, and I know Vince talked to you about it on the pod, about you speaking for Follow Me In. You had to speak to your ex-partner about including him in the book. Is there anyone who was so similar in this that you thought, oh, I better make a call or go and see them? Or
no, not really. I mean, it's kind of based on a colleague that was having mental health issues at one point. But it's all very different, and all the characters and situations are different. I did check in a little bit with someone that has the same kind of condition as the character in the book, just to see whether it sounded like it was a reasonable depiction. But that was pretty much all.
It's an important subject, and it's one you've got to be careful about, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's handled very well in this book, though.
It's very naturalistic. You see it, but you don't expect it. So it's you go, oh, right, but it's not, I don't know if that's the wrong thing to say, it's not, it wasn't totally unexpected when I knew, because there's little warning signals he gives out as you go along, aren't there, about not speaking to his parents, about then he doesn't come into work one day, and there's little things that you build it gradually, don't you?
And that's what it's like when you make a new friend and you find these things out gradually. And you do have those moments sometimes where you're a little bit taken aback and you're like,
Because if you were presented with, you're going to be doing this in X amount of months' time, if you become friends with this person, you would kind of balk at it. But because it comes on gradually in steps, it's kind of like you can boil a frog by putting the water up. Do you know what I mean? You turn the temperature and it boils up. But if you put them in hot water, it'd jump out.
Yeah.
That kind of...
I mean, sometimes we've all been guilty of rushing into friendships and then suddenly going, hang on a minute, what's all this about? And we've all done that, I think, at some point.
268 episodes later, I'm sure. But in terms of this book, and I think obviously melancholy has been brought up, but also in your tone and your palette and your artwork, Follow Me In with the nature of it is quite a colourful book. There are, you know, quite personal and deep themes going on in that book, but obviously you're talking about the South Americas and things like that, so there's naturally, it's full of life and colour, that book, especially with those wonderful pages in between talking about the actual countries themselves and all of that. But this, it is sort of, it's grayscale, it's monotone. Was that always the decision from the beginning, or did you do it all color and then just grayscaled it afterwards?
No, it was part of the plan. I just thought that kind of seaside vibe would be quite well served by having it in black and white.
There's a grand tradition of autobiographical books in black and white, aren't there, though? That's the thing, I think. I mean, we're all super impressed with Follow Me In, but I can see the, oh my god, that must have taken years to colour that.
Yeah. Though I did, because I still shade my black and white work, it's not kind of just line art, it's all shaded. It did take longer than I was expecting, to the point where if we hadn't had this COVID-19 lockdown, I would have been in trouble with my deadline, because I was really working crazy hours to get it finished in time.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Well,
so hardback and softback, is there a combination, or is it?
This one is a soft cover,
right?
Which is quite nice. That means it can be more affordable. And also, sometimes people say easier to hold and read.
Yeah, is it the same size as page dimensions as Follow Me In?
I think it is. Yeah.
Nice.
I think we bagged some book plates because we got in there early.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you had to sit down. And
you snooze, you lose.
Yeah. Sorry, losers. No.
Because I was keeping an eye on that 3 p.m. Avery Hill tweet to say it's gone to sale.
And, I mean, we don't want to undersell this. Dan has been really looking forward to this book for ages. Yeah. He's just been going on about it.
And you've turned his head cap, because Dan usually just likes seeing men being blown up with bazookas.
Yeah.
And you've definitely turned his head.
Oh, well, I'm very proud. I'm bring out his softer side.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you can put that as a pull quote on the back. Dan usually likes people being blown with bazookas, but he loves this.
Normally, I like seeing men being cut in half, but this is pretty good. There you go. Dan Vanguard.
Yeah. Oh, dear. But I'm glad you talked about your art process and stuff, because this is something, you know, I want to get into a bit more anyway, because it's, you've got such a unique style, and you've always had a unique style, which we've seen sort of grow and develop. But you work digitally, do you?
Yes, yeah.
And if you look at these pages, I guarantee you some people will never know that. They will
know. I've it's pencil. Yeah.
Yeah, because of the brushes you use and like, how was that always the case? And you've just sort of refined and you're just improving and perfecting those digital techniques, or did you have like an original sort of way of working and you've worked to replicate that digitally? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think probably that's true. When I say I work digitally, Follow Me In was drawn in pencil and it was coloured in Photoshop. So that was kind of half and half.
Oh, wow.
And cat zines, they were actually mostly drawn in pencil with a little bit of kind of shading added digitally. But this was my first time using Procreate. I drew it on an iPad. So I had to learn how to use Procreate, which was a little bit of a learning curve, but it's a really, really great program.
It's what I'm using now, and I love it. And just the fact that you've managed to, you know, this just feels so natural. For anyone that's just started using Procreate and getting used to it, thinking, oh, I can't do this. You've done so well with this that it's so surprising that it's digital. How long did you get used to the program before actually starting the book itself properly?
Well, what I did to force myself to use it a lot, I happened to buy it, the iPad, just before October last year, and then Inktober was happening, and I thought, well, I might do that for the first time and commit to doing a daily comic, and I'll draw it all with my new iPad. And I thought, if I announce that I'm going to do that, then I'll have to do it, and I'll draw a lot and I'll get used to it. And that did work. I was forced to draw every day. But it does take a little while for you to find the tools that work for you and stuff.
And certain brushes. I mean, are you using brushes that came with the program, or have you, I mean, I've recently just, I've got to look it up in a minute, but there's like, I subscribe to some designer resources and things like that, you know, the free markets, where you get, there's certain ones where you can sign up to the newsletter and you get 6 free sort of, it could be brushes, it could be vectors, it could be photographs, all kinds of things that you get free. But there's also marketplaces to buy things, and recently, since I'm using Procreate more, I've searched for Procreate brushes and seeing if they, that's why, if anyone's seen some of the doodles I've done recently, they've seen some half-tone patterns popping up there. It's because I thought, oh, I'd like to use a half-tone pattern, so I found a brush and I really like it. So did you use the tools that were there, or did you look for something that would give you your style?
I've mostly used the tools that are there, but I bought a pack of pencil tools from someone that makes those, and they're really, really good, because there are a lot of pencil tools on there already, but these were just extra good. And I'm really glad that you think it still looks like pencil, because I do get that comment a lot when people talk about digital art. They say, you know, it always looks very digital, or you can always tell. And my goal is to try and make it not look like that if possible.
Yeah, this looks like pencil, chalk, charcoal, a lot of these pages.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was going to be. Yeah, definitely.
So it speaks a lot, but unfortunately, folks, there's no original pages.
Yeah, that's the only pain with this, isn't it, Kat?
Yeah,
you could have sold us all a page very cheaply. But because we're friends. But the, that's the shame, isn't it? That's what we're seeing these days. I know some people print out blue line, don't they, and ink over it and sell the pages like that sometimes.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, it is annoying, because I have sometimes managed to sell original pages before, but in terms of, it's, for me, it allows me to work so much quicker.
Yeah, that's the benefit weighed against it, isn't it?
And also the waste of paper. When I did Follow Me In, I drew the whole thing in rough, then I like scanned it all in, and this is a huge process, scanning, printed it out at the final page size, light boxed all those again. So by that point, I'd, you know, done hundreds of sheets, A4 sheets of paper. And with this, you do it all, you know, within the same file. You can do your rough and then your final version just on top of it, and you're not scanning, printing, throwing away reams of paper. So it's just, it seemed more efficient, yeah. I think. But you do end up with nothing physical to kind of.
I mean, I think we've got past the whole thing where people are a bit snobby about people using Procreate and stuff now, haven't we? Yeah, it used to be, certainly at some of the fairs we go to in London, people would go, oh, you do it digitally, do you? You know, because, oh, I'm a traditionalist. But I think that's gone away now. Yeah. I think we're a couple of years away from that.
Plus, you've always got the option. Like, if you're an artist who can do both, do you know what I mean? You can play both instruments. There's nothing stopping you. You know, you could do your graphic novels. You could do your books on digitally. There's nothing stopping you to do an original piece of artwork, sell it as some prints, but also have the option of selling that original piece to...
Yeah, or sketching at conventions and stuff. Yeah. You've got to keep both muscles going, haven't you? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely don't believe in the idea that traditional media is superior in any way.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's just whatever.
All these people type their scripts
on
computers, don't they? We're not using typewriters, let's face it, anymore, are we? You know, so what's going on? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I agree.
I guess there's that kind of romanticism of it being purer or more close to the art. I don't know. Perhaps it's just a bit kind of, I don't know. I don't want to say Luddite because that's too harsh of a word. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's a definite kind of, say if we had your book, Kat, and it was all drawn like with super smooth gradients, and it wouldn't feel the same book, and people might be sort of like, well, this doesn't feel real, it doesn't feel authentic, because the art tone is the art, the way you've done the art is as much as the book as the writing is. Sometimes
it's completely
like,
genuine. I think it's people who use like poser or something like that, oh my god, that turns my eye, you know. But
I mean Kat, you've taken the time to get your style right in the digital and make it look like that, you know. It's It probably would have felt different from you if you tried like a... I know what it's like to have the cleaner digital style, because like when you use... As soon as you use a solid ink pen on Procreate, it feels so weird and different and in a lot of ways cold. It works for some people's artwork, but for mine... Also, when I'm trying... I have to use a brush pen, which is like freer, and I'm using like looser strokes, because if I use like a solid pen and try to draw like I would on paper... I'm thinking, this is brilliant. This is going to be brilliant. So detailed. And then I hide the layer that where the sketch is, and I look at it, and I think, was I on a boat on a rocky sea when I drew this? Because it's all over the place.
Yeah, I get that too, Vince. You're not alone, mate.
Yeah. God bless layers.
I had the red pencil layer, and just see the inks, and I think, Jesus Christ. That's why I think next time, once Vanguard's done, I want to go to a lot more sketchier style to do a comic in. I just think it looks better.
Yeah. What have you got in terms of like reference for things like this? Because you're not afraid of interiors, exteriors, street scenes. You know, there's backgrounds. Every page has a background, pretty much. What have you got? And you don't. It's not a static camera, if we can call it that. That you use, you know, you're playing with angles and things. So what do you use in terms
winding
of...
streets and stuff like that? That's the nature of the seaside, is those streets aren't straight. They're not a grid, are they?
Yeah,
they sort of wind down towards the sea. Yeah. Oh my god.
So what do you use in terms of reference for all of these things, whether it be interiors or exteriors?
I use Google. That's pretty much
Yay!
It.
Yeah.
I just, when I come to rough the pages out for the first time, anything that needs reference, like a street, I just Google Brighton Street or whatever, save a bunch of images to a folder. Yeah. And then I usually, I often think I'm going to come back to them when I do the final art. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes there's enough information just in the rough that I can kind of make it up a bit, which is quite nice. That stops me relying on the reference too much.
Yeah.
I just search for images.
But what about the interiors, though? For instance, you have places, for instance, this is, you know, it's a fictionalised movie theatre. So you've got the auditorium and stuff. Or, you know, her apartment and things like that. And this is a question for a lot of people, actually. Do you sort of do little layouts, like a little floor plan of what this room looks like, so you know what it's going to...
Yeah, because you point out where each screen is, don't you? You say at one point that's the bigger screen there, and you've got to keep that in your mind, haven't you?
Well, the layout of the cinema was kind of based on the actual place I worked, so I did that all from memory. When it came to the abandoned auditorium upstairs, I couldn't find any specific images of that, so I just combined a bunch of, I just, you know, Googled you know, derelict theatre auditorium and stuff, and combined a bunch of different images into what my memory of that place was like. But the thing about making a little map of rooms, I wish I had done that for the apartments, because I ended up, I don't know, I just think that would make it easier. I didn't, and I kind of ended up wishing I had. I just cobbled it together in terms of, oh God, if he's standing here and the kitchen's there, I suppose this bit has to be on the right. But I think it would be more sensible to plan it out.
I mean, no one's going to... I certainly didn't notice. This is not something I thought about. But those moments like, you know, making a cup of tea and having conversations and sitting on the sofa, you know, they're such a close and personal and important part of your storytelling, isn't it? So, if you zoom out and he's in the kitchen, you can see the sofa all the way in the background, it kind of has to correlate. I think you've been very clever with your choice, and you like to... There's rarely lots of... you're not far away from the characters. You're always in close with them. With their conversation, their discussion.
I love that about British UK, you know, in these sort of autobiographical comics, is we live in the faces of the characters, don't we, a lot of the time? Mm. A lot of the reactions and the emotion and the story.
The camera's pulled out and there's looking on all the characters in the lobby, obviously sharing a moment together, and they're standing outside
that moment.
Although the moment of the mice, the baby mice, that freaked me out.
That freaked me out and really, really saddened me.
That's
all the incidents like that are all based on real things that have happened in my jobs.
I got a bit of a Eraserhead vibe out of that. I'm sorry to say.
Oh God, sorry about that.
I mean, now that you've flexed your fiction muscle, what are we going to see next? Is there anything? You think I'd love to do a horror story or? Yeah, I'd love to do a thriller. Is anything that you've now thought, right, I really want to move into that now? Now that I'm happy and slightly more confident, what do you want to do now?
It's tricky because, like I was saying, the thing I really struggle with is coming up with new ideas. So I don't have anything specific. And also my taste, I very much like the kind of kitchen sinky, naturalistic style of story. And so I haven't yet felt a huge urge to do something way off from that. Like
maybe exploring a single person. Yeah, that's an interesting. I tried it last year.
Ever you want to do sort of like a kitchen sink, black and white ghost story, I'm there for. I think you could
dead mice.
don't get. I've lost it. I've gone.
The dead mice sequence kind of makes it feel a lot more real, because that's the kind of stuff that does happen in real life.
I bet that's happened to Kat.
That is not the sort of thing that would spring to my mind.
Dead animals falling on our heads.
Also those bastards from the general public who are just rude and ignorant. There was those moments where I thought, that's come from personal experience.
Oh God! Initially, I wanted to put lots more of that stuff in it, but you know, you have to kind of tear down
it
the story.
It might make you seem like you just hate everyone. Is that what
yeah, I was worried about that. I did cut one scene because I was like, this just makes me sound really angry.
Well, that's the clerk. That's the clerk's element to it. That's what Ricky's going on about, isn't it?
Yeah.
The time.
Yeah. But the main character does grow in as much that she's kind of a bit non-confrontational, and then she kind of starts changing, and the kind of direction from her new friend, and stronger for it. I mean, you only have to point out sometimes people are behaving rudely and they sort of check themselves.
What I've learned in years of customer service work is that people really don't expect you to stand up for yourself sometimes. If you do, they're very taken aback, like you say, they're not expecting it. And then
What do you think we could move into now? Maybe include a bit of that, then a forward roll and a kick to the head, something like that. You know, move into the Jackie Chan area. You know,
this isn't
Diet Coke and then just, you know, machine guns.
I like this
idea. Could definitely do
I mean, you got a bit of the toilet humour as well with the scene where talking about someone having a poo in there.
That's definitely a true story. That's definitely.
I think lots of people that have worked in, you know, public spaces have had something like that happen.
Yeah.
It's pretty horrifying.
I used to work in Waterstones, and there was like a fella who was sitting down on this seat, and then he sort of just went out of the shop and he just pissed on the seat.
Did you? Oh, like, my word. Did you say you used to work in Waterstones then?
Yeah, I used to work in Waterstones.
I can picture Dan being like Daisy Steiner from Space. You know that scene where a bloke goes, could you point me in the direction of the self-help books, please? Fuck off.
Yeah. And she's got a trolley of books she's just cramming
into the shelves.
No, I had a bit of a Machiavellian scheme to get myself in charge of the sci-fi and the comic section, which played out, obviously.
Nice. and also for those wondering, Machiavellian is Dan's big word of the week. Word so word. Mark your bingo card now.
It was my safe word.
I could have said Game of Thrones kind of scheme, but that's really blasé now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, everyone's so over that.
So 2019.
I opened up, sorting out this cupboard. We've got a couple of board games in there, and there's a Game of Thrones Monopoly still in the cellophane wrapper. So I fucking hell, no one's going to buy that.
Won't even sell down the boot fair.
No, I won't be able to get rid of it down the boot fair.
It's almost Pavlovian now. If you mention Game of Thrones, someone's got to say, yeah, but the last season. You know,
yeah,
it's like that,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. They'll really enjoy the game until the very end, and then they'll just complain about it and wish they could do the last round again.
It's like, yeah. And how long it took so long to finish that game. Things like that, yeah.
Has everyone ever finished a game in Monopoly? I've never done it.
No, I don't think so. No. Yeah. Usually turns into some huge fight with my missus. She, you know, batters me. Yeah.
I mean, I've never thought about that. Monopoly. Has anyone ever finished it?
Someone must have. But I've never.
So where one runs out of money completely or something. Is that what happens?
There is like loads of our audience now screaming at their iPods or all those screens at the moment.
Who are these people I'm listening to, idiots?
Yeah.
Yeah, ACP streamer online game Monopoly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
we'll have a Twitch channel.
Hot lovely action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, you go.
I was gonna say, did you want to switch on talking a bit about what's going on at Avery Hill at the moment, Kate? You're still very much involved there, are you? Or
yeah, I am, yeah, thank goodness, because I don't have my other job now.
Oh god.
I've been quite busy with that. This year we had the fun of at the start of the year we were really, really getting good with our scheduling and, you know, getting really organized. I was like, this is the year I've cracked the scheduling of, you know, getting the whole year planned out and everything done in advance. And then the pandemic happened and all our book release dates got pushed back and everything, all the social media that I'd scheduled had to be unscheduled and rescheduled. It's been a bit crazy, but it's kept me busy, which is good. But I think the lineup this year is amazing.
We talked about Mr. Pomeroy's book a few weeks ago. Yeah, very much enjoyed that.
I was wondering, because I haven't heard you guys for a little while, and I was wondering if you'd covered anything already.
Yeah, we covered that. Yeah, Victory Point. I'm blanking. Yeah. Victory Point, yeah. Yeah, really liked it, mate. Yeah, yeah, really good.
Yeah. It's funny, because there's been a little bit of unintentional, accidental crossover in themes, because that was kind of like a seaside town setting where the atmosphere of the town was almost like a character in the book itself. Kind of similar to mine in a way, but very different.
That is weird, isn't it? Yeah, I never thought of that, yeah. So what else have you had out? And what else is coming out? What have you got? What should people be looking for?
Well, the first half of the year, there were four books. There was Charlotte Christensen's What We Don't Talk About, which is a really stunningly beautiful book. I don't know if you've seen the artwork.
Yeah, read that. Yeah.
It's really amazing. And that's doing really, really well. I'm really pleased for her because she's getting loads of attention from that book.
Did you want to let the readers know what that one's about?
Yeah, it's kind of about the difficulties of being in a mixed race relationship. And it's kind of...
It reminded me a bit of a sort of kitchen sink Get Out, somehow.
There is a little bit of that feeling to it, a little bit, definitely with the really oppressive family setting. Yeah. But yeah, it's a really beautiful story because it's got that real heartbreak of, you know, realizing that things aren't working and what you're going to do about that. It's just really kind of a really heartfelt story, I think, and really, really beautifully drawn. There was also The Flood That Did Come, Patrick Ray, which is another really interesting one. it's probably one of the more arty ones of the year in terms of it's kind of a little bit experimental and kind of playful and playing with the form a little bit. That's a really interesting one. And also the other one from the first half of the year was Abs Bailey's Zebedee and the Valentines, which I ended up really loving. It's kind of like a band story. It seems like
I haven't read that one yet. That's the one I haven't read.
Oh, you haven't read it? Okay. No. I won't give anything away, but what I loved about that book was that it really surprised me. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I love it when that happens with a book. So yeah, it's way more kind of poignant and moving than you think it is when you see this kind of psychedelic artwork.
Okay.
You think it's going to be this really crazy story, and then it's actually really, really moving. So yeah, that's a really fun one. Another one where the artwork is so kind of cool and eye-catching.
Right. Yeah.
So I really recommend all of those. I think it's been a really exciting year. And then mine and Zoe Thorogood's books are coming out at the end of the year.
I think you've met Zoe, haven't you, V? Is that right?
No, I have not met her yet. She's going to be on the podcast.
We keep scheduling her, don't we? Yeah.
I know she's got a huge following already. And like I've been looking forward to the Impending Blindness of Billy Scott. Which looks bloody amazing. And I can see on the Avery Hill website that the pre-order for that is sold out, it says.
Because you were saying, Kat, you were saying to us that your book's better than that one. Is that right?
Or... Yeah. Absolutely not what I was saying.
Was it something about don't order any of the others, just order three copies of mine? That's what the email said, isn't it?
You're going to sell like hot next week. Oh, yeah. Kat. Come on. Come on, Kat. You're going to sell
it. Can I just say that I didn't send an email?
No.
It's not that hardcore, the guerrilla marketing from Avery Hill.
No. They know where full of shit.
As you say, she's drawing a lot of attention. Her work's getting really, really popular very quickly, which is really exciting. She's still very young, and it's just that, you know, the sort of creator that Avery Hill likes to kind of help give a leg up into their career.
You're going to look at really Tilly and you and stuff like that, I think.
Exactly. So I've just finished reading her book, and it's really great. So definitely that gets another recommendation from me. Again, the artwork is just stunning.
It's such a great sort of and varied lineup of books. I mean, Avery Hill, I mean, we've always been fans of you guys. Since being introduced to them.
How long have you been going now? I think I first picked up one of Tim Bird's books. It's got to be 8 years ago, I'm going to say. Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, I know they started around 2012-ish.
Yeah.
And I've been there, I can't remember now how many years, but quite a few years. That's what's
was
great,
a grey area.
About
I
them
think
is you can't predict what they're going to put out next, and then whatever it is, it's going to be interesting.
Yes. Who do you like best? Is it Ricky or Dave? Who's your favourite?
Oh no. What if I say Steve?
We all love Steve.
Yeah.
We're old.
No. They're all brilliant. And they've been really, really supportive with this book. Ricky always does the editing for me, but Dave does a lot of the printing stuff, the technical stuff with me of getting the books. He gets the files ready for print, and he helps me with that side, dealing with the printers, which can be a nightmare. You've all printed books and stuff.
I've got someone called Vince Hunt who does everything for me.
He's a hack.
Watched your vlog this morning, and you said you got a call from where was it? Somewhere in Europe. You're getting
Malta.
Well, it was a problem with the page. Let's put Vince to the test right now. What was the problem with the page?
It was to do with color profiles of the files that we'd sent, and it wasn't what we'd proofed, and it was all a bit of a nightmare. All that stuff is a total nightmare. So Dave's brilliant at getting through that with me. And, you know, we try and help each other not cry with frustration.
I did it yesterday, Kat. We have a WhatsApp group, and I had to put there, you know how I don't understand computers? Can I ring someone and explain to me what's wrong with my computer? It's like having tech support on a WhatsApp group.
In our design studio, it's a common thing to fall back on. If a client rings up, complains about their advert, you say, have you got a what sort of color controlled environment are you running? I'm looking at my phone. as I see, that can't be accurate then what you're looking at.
Yeah.
It's just
a blanket term to get out of paying any money back to anyone.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But I think probably you all agree that once you've gone through all this nightmare of getting it printed, once you have a physical book and it looks good, it's really, really
It's lovely when you open that box and you take it out for the first time. So great, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that when you look through it and then you see something and you go, that looks great? And you say, oh, shit, I did that. And
Sometimes it's so long ago, you think.
Yeah.
I'm always very surprised and I don't quite know how I did it. But it's there. But what I love in my Avery Hill work, I really enjoy kind of help, you know, just trying to spread the word about these other creators whose work is so amazing. It's way more fun publicising other people's work than your own.
It's easier.
Yeah, we're just talking about that. We're very backwards in coming forwards about. There's some people you see that all they want to do is just tell you how brilliant they are, but I can't quite do it. I can sarcastically say something, but that's about as far as I'll go.
But I mean, you've put together a brilliant book which is coming out, and also you get the joy of like spreading the word about all these other fantastic books. So you're you know, comics wise, you must be quite chuffed at the moment. There's a lot to talk about.
Follow Me It was so well received, and this I'm sure will be the same, mate. I've got to tell you, I've said this about your books before, and I'll say it again, is that I love knowing what people are feeling without this sort of overemphasis of melodrama and long speeches. I just think that you set such a tone and you build such character that it sets it up perfectly. We all became hugely invested in this. Honestly, the three of us read it and we were chatting about it. We've been chatting about it for a couple of days now about how invested we are in the characters in it. And
we were talking before we came on, Kat, because we have our, like, let's get everything sorted for the show. Yeah. And quite a portion of it was talking about the book, and
that's lovely. That makes me so happy because, like I said, not many people, only another three people have read it apart from you guys so far.
We really appreciate that.
Yeah. You do always have that doubt in the back of your mind of like, is this just total rubbish? And I just haven't realised.
I genuinely think we need honesty in stuff like that, and I think people often see us as the people who will be honest about something. If there was something that we didn't quite get in it, you know.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I've just noticed this.
What has he noticed?
Oh no!
Has he just noticed something and then he drops out? He's done that on purpose. He's the most dramatic podcast host in the entire world.
I've heard a rumor about you. Bye.
Yeah. This feels like the most dramatic part of the episode, and we keep losing you. Are you there, Dan?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go for it.
Oh, Jesus. We should do that bit again. I just noticed something. In Breakaway, the characters don't have thought bubbles, but they did in the main character, you in the book, did have thought bubbles in Follow Me In. Is that correct? I can't get the book.
Yeah, that's right.
Even with that, you still sell and get the emotions of the characters and what they're portraying without those kind of in a speech stuff. Because I feel like sometimes that's a shortcut for writers to kind of like, oh, that's really upset me. That you play that out in the character's emotion and the situation. I just noticed that, and I thought it was a little observation I wanted to throw in.
That's the difference between a fiction book and an autobiographical book, is it? I suppose. I don't know.
I guess, thought bubbles lend themselves to autobiography, I guess, because it's all about that person's inner life or whatever. Mm. But I did wonder, actually, whether, because I really enjoy drawing body language and facial expressions and stuff, and I wonder whether, because I've worked in a theatre for almost 20 years, that I've been watching actors work for that whole time, and whether that comes into it. Because when I come to draw a scene, I often immediately know how I want, you know, the character to be sitting or standing to kind of convey what's going on. I think that might have been unconsciously helpful.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, especially for a book like yours, which is there's a stage play element to parts of it, isn't it? The theatre, the steps in the theatre and the lobby there could be a theatre stage, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Now, one last question about the book, and we'll try to do this without any spoilers. People may ask, it is one of the first questions we ask Kat before we start recording. Breakwater. Is the title something you want to describe, or do you want your readers to look into it? Because it may be one of those, oh, why is it called Breakwater?
Yeah, I guess
because you will get that question. You'll get that question quite a lot, I think.
Yeah,
definitely. I'll just say what I thought of when I was I was thinking of lots of words relating to the seaside setting and stuff. And I do remember when I used to, you know, hang out on Brighton Beach and stuff. There's all these little, you know, walls that go out into the sea, and you can walk along them and sit on them and stuff. And the characters in my book do that at one point. And to me, some of the themes of the book are to do with, you know, in a person's relationship with other people, you can find yourself taking on a lot of, you know, other people's problems and issues. And then, I don't know, I think the book is kind of about how you deal with that and at what point you decide to set up some sort of protections and boundaries for yourself. And at what point do you put yourself first and stop yourself kind of giving too much to other people. And so that was the idea of because the breakwaters are kind of built on the coast to stop the coast eroding away. And so that was kind of the metaphor that I had in my head. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's hard to discuss it too much about undermining the book. So
yeah.
It will make sense to you, lovely
draw
people.
Draw a veil down.
Yeah, once you read the book itself, which we highly recommend you do, and you pre-order. You can pre-order now. When are the books actually being released?
The official release date, they're going to be in shops in November, but they'll be shipping from Avery Hill's store in September, so a little bit earlier.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Okay.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so you get that benefit of being a pre-order and buying directly from Avery Hill, which is always a good idea, because I know this from nowhere, you make more money from the company than, you know, selling it through Amazon or something, don't you?
Yeah,
definitely. Direct orders are really good for the company. Yeah. But also, yeah, just our schedules have all been slightly messed up this year with the whole situation. Yeah. So,
Which I think is, you know, if you're a comics fan and you have issue with that, get a life. because everyone's in the same boat and everyone's doing whatever they can to get you amazing books. So
I've been trying to make an effort to go direct to people who make the books or whatever to get.
Yeah.
Rather than, because we got like, I realize everyone has a fucking Amazon Prime account and you can have it like the next day. But it's like, well, then only get a smaller cut from that.
Yeah.
I'd rather have more money go to the people who made them.
And the other one is digital comics. Comixology take between 45 and 55%, don't they, off your book? So that's another thing quickly, Kat, is you've just gone digital with Katzine, haven't you? You stuck them all out.
Yeah. I was just going to say this. I haven't listed them all yet. I've listed the first four because that's another thing that Avery Hill have done this year too, is they've made all their books available digitally, which is, I think, is really brilliant. I mean, especially with a lot of people being, you know, locked down and not, you know, having some spare time and also not wanting to head out.
We're all doing it, mate. Much, even an old bloke like me who's used to paper, we're all reading books digitally now. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's brilliant. I mean, you can offer them at a better, you know, more affordable price that way. And we're doing it through Gumroad, the Gumroad store. So that means you can, you know, get them really easily, really quickly. You just buy it and it's there on your device, whatever you read on.
Yeah.
So I've just decided to do that with my back catalogue of zines as well. Just make them available that way. And I'd never really thought about this, but I've actually had really good feedback from people, both for myself and Avery Hill, who have said, you know, I live in Australia and I just don't really want, apart from the delay, the time it would take, I don't really want, you know, to have a plane fly this book or whatever it might
be. Exactly. So, and we've all got to think about that, because the world of comics is much bigger than England and Scotland. And, you know, the only way you get a breakout hit and you actually make some money out of a book, good money out of a book now, is getting it into American and Australian hands. And
Do you deal with foreign rights?
Have you sold anything to France yet? Or
no, I believe that's something that's being worked on. But I don't know about that yet.
I can see this going down really well in France. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look at something like Maggie Garrison, which came from France, didn't it? And that's set. Oh, that's set in Brighton.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
They're just going to take over the world, people. They're going to take over the world. And Kat will be leading the charge. So thank you again for joining us this week, Kat, to be on the show.
Thank you.
I think this is the first time you've been on the whole show as well, because I believe the first time you were on it was just in a sort of interview section. Both times.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to Breakwater 2, The Revenge as well. It's going to...
The John Wick style.
I've got it.
Customer revenge story.
Got it. Yeah. I've got the title already. Breakwater. Breakwater.
Yes.
There you go.
Oh, my God. Yes. Because there could be a bit of surfing in there as well.
Yeah. Everything is better with Patrick Swayze in it.
Absolutely.
It wasn't
Johnny
Darko.
Patrick Swayze as Dalton out of Roadhouse fighting John Wick.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then Whoopi Goldberg turns up. Oh, no, that's a different Patrick Swayze film. Anyway. I love Whoopi Goldberg. Trek, huh? I was thinking about this the other day. She did a couple of action films in the 80s as well, didn't she?
Yes. Was it Burglar or something like that?
Jumping Jack Flash.
Yeah.
Did she do the movie that lost the most money? Was it something Rex? Tyrannosaurus?
We don't talk about that, Tony. Yeah. Why bring everyone down? Why have you got to do this, man, every time?
It's weird. It's that thing of like someone wins an Oscar. An actor wins an Oscar, and then the next film they pick is the fucking worst.
Yeah, cough, Catwoman. Yeah.
There's loads. I'm sure there's like a phenomenon of actors like picking, getting an Oscar, and then picking the worst fucking film to follow it up with.
Yeah, I believe it's something to do with money.
Root of all evil, but we'll still accept it anyway. So, Kat's with us for the rest of the show. Which is either, well, it's good for our listeners, probably bad for her. so we'll be recommending some books very shortly to you lovely people. But before we do that, do we have any shout-outs? Obviously, the shout-out section in this day and age at the moment is becoming a little bit of a Kickstarter corner. So I should say, what Kickstarters have we got to shout out this week, Ted?
Neither of mine are Kickstarters. I've got two.
You go first then, Tony, and then we'll get on to the Kickstarters.
First one. Drink and Draw Baby, how well did that go?
Oh yes, yeah,
big, so good.
Yeah, huge shout out to Tom Curry
and Mrs. Curry.
Yeah, the Curries for putting on a Drink and Draw. Check out Skelly Bob. Bing.
Yep.
I would put in like a bell sound that rings, but that's
can't be bothered.
But yes, thank you for hosting the Drinking Draw again, Tom. The third one was another massive success.
Oh, it's so good. I think we had 30 people at one point.
It's getting bigger all the time. I mean, think about these Drinking Draws. You know, sometimes we announce them, people are like, oh, I can only pop in for a little bit, or I won't be there straight away. You can pop in, say hello, and then leave again. Or, you know, you can pop in, just do some drawing. You know, there's some amazing artwork we saw.
We had a bit of a secret guest as well on this one, didn't we? We didn't advertise it beforehand because we wanted just the usual crowd. We didn't want to, you know, just people jumping in, you know. But I spoke to Pat and Lisa Mills and said, oh, do you fancy, we've got a Drink and Draw. Did you fancy popping in 5 minutes? Just say hello. It'll cheer everyone up. You know, it's nice for sort of lockdown blues. And they both came in. They both kept up their end by drinking. And Pat ended up staying for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And was the best company. And everyone was asking him questions and we were chuckling and... Yeah. it was such a great night. I had an absolute blast. Bear in mind, none of us go to the pub anymore or anything like that. No one's actually have a proper social life. We were all online. It was almost as good, you know?
Yeah. So it was a thoroughly great time. Seeing lots of... and not just your standard guns and, you know, it's not, you know, your superhero stuff. I love seeing the variety of artwork that when people
some
are
cracking
showing.
Stuff. Yeah. Ashcroft was on form, wasn't he?
Yeah, Ashcroft was on
form. Imber was there. Yeah, loads of people.
Yeah, and everyone posts Gareth up. Hopkins. Yeah, Gareth Hopkins, Rachel Lee Carter was showing some of her stuff.
Sarah Harris, I drew the amazing Flicking Man, which comes from a story that will never get told again.
It will never get told. It is a tale as old as time. Make of that what you will. But no, it was just good fun. And like, so if you can make it next time, and I know we posted up on it, and there's some artists that have got in touch with me and sort of said, oh, when is this happening again? And we will post details up.
Yeah.
And to those people, if you listen to this, I'll get in touch. I'll let you know when it is. It's all pretty simple.
You drew me.
Yeah, accidentally.
He's obsessed, Kat. That's
yeah, actually, I've got a Procreate brush set that just is just all Tony Evans brushes.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was fantastic. What's your next one, Tony?
I just got sent through a copy of Department of Truth, issue 1, which is coming out from James Tynion IV and our friend Martin Simmons coming out.
Getting a lot of buzz.
Oh, my God. I'm getting a real Sienkiewicz feel from it. I've got to tell you, man.
I was thinking that, Simmons, our lovely friend Simmons is becoming the new Sienkiewicz, isn't he? Is that sort of merging into this
lovely to see working for Image.
Yeah.
So it's I'll probably do a deeper dive on it next week because I haven't read it properly yet. I just scanned through it because they only sent it to me an hour ago. But it's coming out on the 30th of September. Yeah, watch out. That's the next big thing, I think, genuinely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes, Dan, have you got any shout-outs?
Yes, I've got one podcast and two Kickstarters. First podcast, episode 80, the bootleg episode of the Lakes Comic Art Festival podcast.
Oh, that's me.
Tony was on, yeah. You did horror versus post-apocalyptic comics.
Yeah.
And it's fucking great, but like half the stuff you guys have mentioned, it's like, oh, that sounds brilliant. And I was like, I have to get that. Unfortunately, I was out running, so I couldn't take any notes.
Yeah. But I love going with those two guys. They make me laugh so much because they do it on video, so they have the video on all the time. And the way their video is set up, it makes them look like they're in the same room. Right. So I have this little fantasy that they live together and they eat soup at night and stuff. And it just makes me, laugh. Yeah, it was a really good time. It was a lot. We talked a lot of titles very quickly, so there's a lot of sort of recommendations.
But you all know your onions. You were writing your list, and I said, where's Comanche? And there it is. It's in his top five. Yeah. So there's no way Tony's not going to mention that one.
But, yeah, I think if you go to the Lakes podcast Twitter account, you can vote on what's better, horror comics or post-apocalyptic. I think they're having a vote on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's obviously post-apocalyptic.
It is. That's what I think.
I will disagree.
Okay. But there you Kat, go. Make our minds up. Post-apocalyptic comics or horror comics?
I think I have to go post-apocalyptic.
I knew we were best friends. Yeah, you hate Vince. I knew that. Yeah.
So next we've got from the Reckless Hero Boys, Knights vs. Pirates.
Oh, I've backed this. Yeah,
it's 14 days to go, 13 when you hear this on the Monday. It was absolutely destroying.
They're like 250% now, aren't they, or something like that? Or?
Yeah, it's really, really done well, as we suspected it would do. There's still loads of stretch goal stuff there. There's original pages still to available to buy, but you want to get behind this one if you haven't already.
Definitely.
And previous guest on the show, Jason McNamara, he's got his new Kickstarter for his 96-page graphic novel out called Ghost Band. The human race is
gonna be, as well. Yeah, good stuff.
Human race is going to be wiped out in 24 hours. So let's start a band. So
I love that dude. He's great. And I sent him a copy of Tony Osmond, and he read it immediately and replied with, "Tony, am I on a watch list now?" Made me laugh so much.
Yeah.
So Jason's kind of humour has like fitted in so well with us. And
I'll buy anything he writes, man. I'll tell you now.
Loving stuff. So yeah. I'd recommend checking it out.
And this looks also to be a poignant book. And obviously, if he's listening, I would like to talk to him because. Fascinating. Go to the Kickstarter page. This is actually one of the shout outs I had done, so I'm glad. Because I too have also about it. Go to the Kickstarter page, watch the video, because he signs it as well as telling you about the book. For those who are deaf, he does sign language to describe the book.
Nice.
And I just wonder the motivation for that and things like that, because I thought that was fascinating and brilliant and absolutely amazing to for those who obviously can't hear. So this is going to be a good book, a nice one and done. So you're going to get quality. I've got that was one of my Kickstarters, but we spoke about the Drink and Draw, and one of our people that joined us was Ed Bentley.
Send me a friend request this week.
Comic book artist from the UK. He was there, and he does actually have.
You say that, but doesn't he live in France?
He lives in France. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He says he was pretty quiet. I'm afraid. No, you weren't, Ed. You were.
He's all right.
You were talking. It was great. There was something. Yeah, but he does have a Kickstarter at the moment for issue 2 of Dark Boy and Adler, which you should check out. I didn't know about this book, so that's the joy of this show, discovering stuff. Now, it's about unrequited love, disinterested parents, bullying, and voodoo curses. I've got the page here. It's a queer horror comedy. The boys are back in town, and this time they bring a whole bag of love and unnecessarily violence. Now, he wanted, in the video, he wanted to cover these sort of subjects, but do it in a way that isn't being done by anything else. And if you watch the video and you see the artwork, you definitely need to check this out, because this is something a bit different. And also, like, LGBTQ... I'll get all the letters right. I have problems saying people's names, so saying that is going to be a nightmare. But yeah, from that community, this looks like a great book. Go and check it out. There's 24 days to go. Well, 23 as I speak now. And Ed's just a really nice bloke, and I can say that because we spoke to him.
Yep.
so there you go. And Dan did my other shout out, so that's all I've got this week. I'm sure there's others.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. And it's that time of the show where we're going to recommend some books. And as is the way on this show now, it's a new tradition that our lovely guest goes first. So, Kat, anything and everything, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Okay. well, because I'm only just kind of emerging from the whole process of making my own book, I haven't been reading a lot so far this year. But... I mean, the only stuff that I've read this year has been the Avery Hill books, which I've already talked about a little bit. But yeah, if I was going to recommend one book for people to check out, I'm going to say Zebedee and the Valentines, Abs Bailey's book.
Okay.
Just because I've already talked about it a little bit, but it's not officially out until next month, but September in the shops. But you can order it right now from Avery Hill, and it's in stock.
Is it in our review folder? I know we share a review folder with you. Is it in there, is it?
It should be, yes.
I'll have a look. Okay.
And I just think, yeah, it's one that I'd love to give a little boost to, because it really, as I said before, it took me by surprise. And it's a kind of classic story of kind of rock and roll decadence and bad behaviour, but then it turns into something that you're not really expecting. And I found it really moving, and it was really creatively illustrated and a really surprising story, so I'm gonna go for that one. But you can't go wrong with any Avery Hill book ever, I don't think so.
there she goes. She's got some more brownie points. But I mean, you're not wrong. But the great thing also about Avery Hill as well, if you just go on the website, there's nice, decent sized thumbnails for you to check out. There's examples of these pages. And there's some great pages for this book on the website for you to get.
Because also with this particular book, the style is quite sort of cartoony and mad, but it's actually a really kind of a really moving and realistic story. So that's something I really liked about it, and I think people should check it out.
Yeah, and I mean, it also has a bit of dialogue that maybe made me laugh. It's just a speech bubble of someone going, "Blimey, you look like shit," and that just made me laugh.
Yeah, it will make you laugh. As well as being moving, but I'm excited to hear what you guys' recommendations are, because as I say, I'm just emerging from having been working.
You're very polite, Kat. You don't have to be on that with us.
I'm looking for suggestions myself.
Oh, okay. V, I've got two to do. One very quick one and one normal length one. So I'll do my.
You go first,
I'll do my really quick one first, shall I? So we spoke about him earlier. So I bought a copy through his site of The All New Adventures of Magnum PI by Mark Jackson. It's A5. Two coloured, so it's sort of red, orangey red and black, and it's basically I was a big huge great series, best series out there, and in it it's a sort of mystery where Thomas Magnum wakes up with a pair of frilly red knickers and he's got to figure out where they've come from. If you go to markmakescomics.co.uk or Mark Makes Comics on Twitter, you can buy yourself a copy, and it's really fun. It's just sort of stupid. You know, he's obviously a fan himself. And it ends on Higgins going, "What in the world? Magnum, where did you find these?" And he's holding the pants. And there's obviously something that's gone on that we'll find out in maybe the next issue. But I love Magnum. There you go. That's my first.
Yeah, Magnum's got such a great theme tune as well.
One
of the best theme tunes.
Did you see that clip on Twitter when... I'd never seen the episode, but like Magnum's shaking down some old lady and she's got a parrot. And then the old lady sicks the parrot on Magnum, and he starts like scratching his face to fuck.
That's a bit weirdest grim. Moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit Hitchcockian for Magnum, isn't it?
Yeah. It needs to come back. It's one of those things I need to watch on, you know, during my lunch break.
It does need to come back because haven't they done a new version of it? Where
I don't mean that. I mean re-show it. They did a new version of a bloke who's about 5 foot two.
I've been rewatching Knight Rider.
Nice.
There was a quote that fucking made me burst out laughing. I think I tweeted about that. Devon gets done up by a couple of corrupt police officers and put in jail. And he's in his cell, and his two cellmates are saying how they're going to break up. And he goes, "Oh, that's never going to work." And they go, "Well, excuse me, Devon, you don't look like the type of person to break out of a jail." And he went, "Yeah, that's what the Gestapo thought too." Then he proceeds to tell them how he broke out like two prisons in the war and how he's fucking great at it.
All right.
what a boss.
They were low on crowd scenes.
Yeah, what a boss.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Anyway, yeah, so check that one out. I got caught up with the Magnum talk and the Knight Rider talk then. I'll go next. I'm going to talk about a book that was put together. I mean, you've probably seen it online somewhere when the Kickstarter went out, and it came through this week. Jordan Thomas put this book together, and he was on the show talking about it, so go to the vaults and look that one up. This is Quarantine. One story, 28 artists, no escape. The synopsis is, when Ballard Apartments is zapped into an alternate universe because something is wrong in the building, the Loon family find themselves staring out their lounge window at asteroids and planets instead of the usual scene of trees in the Tesco Express. This is how their life in quarantine begins, a world of guard bots patrolling the halls, coloured goo for breakfast, lunch and dinner, and an odd feeling that they're being watched. Now, this is a book called Quarantine that came about during quarantine, but this ain't about the current state of affairs that we live in. This is a great book. This is a lot was made of it, and he promoted it very well, and it's basically every page of this book is a different artist. One singular script, and each page is done by different eyes. Now, I'm going to run through the list.
There's one artist.
Oh, yeah.
Do you mind me telling you how many this book? Yeah, I can't tell who this artist is, and they're amazing.
Right.
Have
you got the print copy of this, Dan? Have you got the print copy as well?
I think it's Emma Kubert, the artist. But go on.
I like her stuff. Yeah, I'll follow her on Instagram. She's good.
Here's the list. Right. Obviously, I'll start off short with a cover by Derek Robertson. Some people may know him. Right, and the others, and I apologise for any names I get wrong. We've got Ahmed Rafat, Alex Moore, Andre Satano, Andy Bloor, Andy W. Clift, Anna Redman, Benjamin Philby, Chris Matthews, Clara Meath, Clark Bint, Craig Patton, Dan Erie, Donna A. Black, Edward Bentley, Emma Kubert, Gary Erskine, Gavin Mitchell, Gustavo Vargas, Louis Joyce, Martin Simpson, Pete Taylor, Rory Donald, Rosie Packwood, Russell Mark Olson, Saint Yak, Sarah Millman, Shaky Kane. We've got pin-ups by Ian Laurie, Warwick Fraser-Coombe, and John McRae. And I managed to do that, and I didn't really lose that much breath.
I've got to tell you, that's probably well done, been a surprise for the first time that they've ever said Shaky Kane and Sarah Millman in the same sentence.
I know, on the same. On yeah, the
I
same
love
book.
Them both, but they're very different.
Yeah. And it says a lot about this book. And just also, obviously, Jordan Thomas was the writer. Letters by Letter Squids, designed by Daniel Gruitt. Just want to give a shout out to the whole team there. It says a lot about this book that so many different styles, so many different sort of colour palettes, and, you know, because the artists have gone to town on it. And it works as a cohesive unit, you know. This is experimentation. This is comics experimentation at its finest, because on paper this shouldn't work, should it, Dan? I mean, this shouldn't.
It's a strange kind of. But the artwork plays into the story in as much like they're in this reality which is constantly shifting and changing, and that's illustrated by having the different artists.
Yeah.
With their different styles.
Yeah,
incorporated into the story.
And there's some lovely back matter in the back. There's obviously some pin-ups. There's a sketchbook. There is an extra tale, actually, with art by Luke Parker. Forgot about them. J.F. Totti and Sean Phillips. Just that's another name you might know.
Yeah.
And that came about because the Kickstarter did so well. But there's loads of back matter. There's loads of sketches. There's obviously... and nice notes, as well as, like, as Jordan says here, like Russell Olsen did, like, the character sheets. So everyone was working from they were singing from the same hymn sheet, which is why you have this consistency. But the story itself is very much like a Twilight Zone. There's, like, a 70s sci-fi David Cronenberg-like feel. There's body horror, there's family drama. I mean, this is a family that in close quarters they start to get at each other. Do you know what I mean? They start to break down somewhat. And
compared to the other tenants of the building, they fucking play the A game.
Oh god, yeah.
Because there's a moment that you see what's happening on other floors, and just devolved to degeneracy and pagan worship and suicide and
there is one that oh god, just looking at that page, actually on day 30, the page of day 30
by Craig Patton is Killtopia.
Absolutely shocking what some of the people have gone up to. It's like, it's Cronenberg does comics kind of thing, you know, like that Videodrome kind of, like,
yeah,
you know, what the fuck. And it devolves into body horror, and, you know, I don't want to spoil too much. I mean, if you've seen some of the artwork, you see that what happens to this family isn't necessarily pleasant, and it breaks out, and, yeah, it's just everyone brought their A game. That's what I like about it. No one seemed to phone it in, and the letter.
Do you remember, tell me, on day 50, on 9:24 a.m. that day, there's a kind of like shot of a building, of the apartment in question, and there's various time slots and windows where you see these illustrations of what's going on.
Yeah.
And there's all this carnage and chaos. And I don't know the artist, but it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yes, because most of it has this sort of story structure of like day one, day 10, you know, day 30. And then you get to a certain point, and on day 50, the pages then become what happens during that day, 9:10, 9:24, 9:36, you know.
I'll reach out to Jordan, he'll tell you, won't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that page is... Oh, I'll look it off the air. But this is... it's just good sci-fi. Good old-fashioned one-shot sci-fi that is really... just feels like an... Maybe not a Twilight Zone, maybe not. Maybe like an Outer Limits on crack. And it was okay. Just...
I've got to say, fucking Martin Simpson's artwork. Oh,
yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean... You can go through this book. What I like about this book, you can go through this book and you can pick out people that you want to work with or you want to start following, or, you know, there are artists on here, and because, rightfully so, the first couple of pages are the names of the artists, where you can find them on Instagram and where you can find them on Twitter. And it's very much... That's what I love about this book as well. It was, you know, the story's great, but it is very much thank you to everyone that made this possible kind of book, which is really nice to see from a Kickstarter, rather than just I'll take your money, and here's just a book that I didn't really think about, you know, who's buying.
It's like, do
you
that
know
what I mean?
Yeah. Whereas this one's like, it's a fun one shot comic that it'll be interesting to see when everything sort of calms down and when conventions eventually start, or if they eventually start. It'd be nice to see how this does it. conventions and stuff, but go to @Jordan_J_Thomas on Twitter. Just get in touch with him. He, you know, he loves comics and he's a good friend of the show. So it was really good. It was a pleasant surprise because I completely forgot that it was turning up, and then it just turned up. So it's, you know,
it's
turned that around a good time as well.
Yeah. And it's nicely printed book as well. It's how many pages is it in total, Dan? It's a decent level.
I don't know, it's a whack.
Yeah.
We expect so much now from Kickstarters. We're so used to people completing, sending through just after the money's landed, aren't we, you know?
Yeah.
It's I think we're beginning to spot those people who take ages.
It's a big enough book. Obvious. Yeah, it's a big enough book that you can get the name on the spine of the book.
It's perfect bound, isn't it?
Yeah, perfect bound.
Is it, you think, Ballard Apartments, that J.G. Ballard? I think that's the reference.
Yeah,
to,
we'll be on it. Yeah, yeah. To what's that, High Rise? Yeah, I love that book.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of sort of sci-fi elements that I really did think this is sort of 70s kind of like sci-fi ideas. Like the food that they're eating is just like this gelatinous goo, which then becomes more of a thing. They're like, oh, the goo, which isn't those lovely desserts, because I love the lemon cheesecake. Yeah, they're amazing.
You get the glass pot as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, real class. Anyway...
Rest is a good little ashtray, that, if you're out and about.
Get a cheesecake and an ashtray. What more do you want in a dessert?
Oh, my God.
Dan's the one that said it, Tony. is that your recommend as well, Dan, or you got another
it
one?
It was, yes. I was waiting on the
outside the ring. Like the Legion of Doom. Like the Legion of Doom, we just tackled that one as a cohesive tag team. Anyway, Tony... Yeah.
Oh dear, how do I follow that up? So mine is Octobriana 1976, which is what's come out of Jim Rugg.
That's what's come out of Jim Rugg isn't the best way to put it.
No, it's not like that. No, yes. Class. So this is a black light special. Have you ever experienced black light posters, etc.?
Yes.
Do you know what they are?
Well, I know what they are.
Black light. Yeah,
so they sort of glow under black light, don't they? They're designed like that. Mm. And a few years ago, Jim Rugg produced a black light poster of a sort of topless Viking woman. And he thought, why has no one done a comic like this? So he decided to do one. This is relates to Octobriana, who, I don't know, cast your minds back. I know I talk a lot of crap, but in the first year of this show, I did a thing on Octobriana where someone had bought a book out about her. So she's a public domain character. She's from a Russian comic character created in 1971 in Octobriana and the Russian Revolution by Peter Sadecki. She is essentially the spirit of the October Revolution, the spirit of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in the 1917 to 1923. She has a big Russian star on her forehead. You'll probably have seen, she appears all over the place because she's public domain. People use her a lot. So she appeared in Nikolai Dante in 2008, Robbie Morrison and Annie Clark. She's appeared in quite a few of her own series. She appeared most famously, I suppose, in Luther Arkwright by Brian Talbot. Mm-hmm. Someone played her in the Luther Arkwright Big Finish audio, which is worth listening to. And do you remember the question I asked back then was who played Luther Arkwright in that early Big Finish play? Does anyone know?
No.
David Tennant.
Before
Doctor Who. Yeah, so he played a comic book character all those years ago. David Bowie wanted to make a movie about her years ago, and Billy Idol has a tattoo of her on his arm. So there you go. So she's quite the underground cool character. You know, she's sort of hyper-violent, aggressively sexual, prone to sort of firing a lot of machine guns and all that sort of thing. Now, I've sent you guys a page on the WhatsApp and on the DMs I sent to Kat of the interiors, just to give you a taster of how nuts this is.
Yeah.
Why is that the page?
Sorry, mate?
Why is that the page you've sent me?
I don't know. That's just the big page spread. I thought it looked... Oh, no, I've sent you two. I've not sent Kat the rude one. So let's talk about this. So if you open it up, the inside cover is entitled Experimental Sexual Orgy, and a weird bloke staring at someone saying, "Who are you?" I'm not 100% sure how that links up with the comic, but it's very Clausian, I suppose.
It's a hell of an opener.
Yeah. It's like that time I went around your house, Vince. Do you remember?
We don't talk about that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. It's set in the 1970s and inspired by underground comics of the 70s, says Rugg. Now, Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor do Comics Kayfabe, the famous YouTube and now podcast. Has everyone listened to that? Or?
Oh, yeah. Certainly most of our listeners probably.
Yeah. Have you ever tried it, Kat?
I haven't, and I've been meaning to. So I will.
Good comics positivity. They reviewed Atomic Hercules very kindly. And we got a big shoot up in sales, so I'm just returning the favour. Look at the £1 million you'll make out of this review, guys. There you go. It's based with sort of energetic reverence on the dissident republic, your dissident Russian comics that the originally part of this, but it's done in this blacklight style with much more of a. Did anyone read Aphrodisiac, the sort of black exploitation comic that?
Oh, no, I've heard it's on my to read list because that I've heard a lot so of good. Yeah, didn't you recommend that? Did you recommend that one on one of
years ago? Yeah, I did. And it, also Street Angel, which is another great book of his.
Yeah.
It kickstarted, so it actually made £72,000, and it was it made 1,887% of its total. That's pretty good going.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they don't really need me to talk about it, but I enjoyed it so much, so I thought I did. I know that Falpy knows Rug. I think they met in a comic shop once and had a good conversation. So he's a good guy. They're very positive. They're very into underground comics. They do little specials on Wizard issues and stuff like that. So moving on. So after the experimental sexual orgy, it turns out that Stalin is now a robot, a huge robot with knives for hands and a big sort of robotic moustache. He looks a bit like a combination of a Russian leader and Colossus from the X-Men, as you can see from that picture. They're in the war room and Stalin is talking about a bomb he's testing in Siberia, and one of the staff in the sort of war room that they're in objects, so he squishes his head and kills him. Meanwhile, Otobriana breaks into a Siberian labor camp. She's cutting throats. She kills guards with a machine gun. Then she destroys a guard tower with a rocket launcher. So that's how she don't muck about. And then they escape by riding a bear. And she's got a sort of snake on her as well. So they ride a bear out of the camp, which is quite cool. And then her and the scientists ride a sort of kind of who she rescues, rescue science, and they sort of ride this pterodactyl creature onto a train convoy. On the train convoy is the sort of missile command, which they're going to go and destroy. And it sort of devolves at one point. They're on this train convoy. They've got on the back of the flatbed sort of things. They've got tanks. So at one point, she gets into a tank and fires it at someone. So you can see it's just proper full on nuts. But it's just great fun. It's really good stuff. My power comes from Mother Russia, she says at one point. I just loved it. There's not a huge metatextual thing going on here. It's probably the opposite of what we talked about with Cat's book. But you can enjoy both. You know, I think there's space for both. He's done a various, because part of the Kickstarter, I think he must have got tired of trying to create stretch goals when you get to 1,800%. So it came with an email, and you get a neon version, a black and white version, and what's the other one? A glowing, I think it's like a glow version or something like that. It's just great fun. It's exactly what I wanted it to be, and I hope he does more of these, actually, because they look really cool. Hmm. You can find them at the Kayfabe video channel, where he's with Ed Piskor, or you can go to jimrug.com or jimrugart on Twitter. It's being stuck out. You can actually buy it beyond the Kickstarter, so Ad House Books are putting out. Chris Pitzer at Ad House Books. I recommend following at Ad House Books. They're a great American publisher. They're often referred to as the American no-brow, I think you'll find. So they're that sort of aesthetic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're really good stuff.
I love the colours. I love the idea of doing something that's just 100% magenta, 100% yellow. You know what I mean? Just that.
Yeah.
Just...
I really warm to it, man. They talk about being underground comics, and we've kind of adopted a lot of their philosophy with Tribute. So that's what you're going to get. You're going to get something outraged, something turned up to 12. It's that sort of thing. But I'm glad I backed it. I would have felt bad if I hadn't done, because I really like those guys. But this turned out to be really good as well.
Nice.
And the last panel is her giving the finger to the dead head of Stalin as the bear walks off, and her saying, "Revolution forever, bitch."
Oh, well, at least you could have warned me. I would have done a spoiler warning. Unbelievable. We managed to not spoil any of Kat's book and anything else. Sorry about that, Jim.
Yeah, with your 1,800% Kickstarter millions.
Well, maybe.
And a lovely print and a little signed book plate as well. So there you go.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
And, yes, there you go. Lots of fantastic books to check out. Pre-order, order, follow the creators. Just genuinely, one of the joys about this show, there's just so many people for you to check out and discover. You know, with Breakwater and the new stuff coming out from Avery Hill, the future is bright for a lot of books coming out. So
yep.
So go forth, check out the links and check out the show notes, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If there's anything, we haven't talked about the competition, have we?
No, we haven't. Yeah.
I say the competition. Should we do that quickly before we get onto the?
Yeah.
Is Dan still there?
Fuck! I completely forgot about that.
We forget it every week.
Yeah. Well, we can announce the results on Monday. It's been okay. One of those weeks for me. It's really been fucking nuts. So
keep voting. And what's the next stage? They've got to design the character. Is that the next page?
No, next stage is the masthead, the logo, yeah. The comment.
Okay.
So for a bit of fun on the ACP Facebook group, there's polls and going up, and lots of people just being creative. We've gone through a process of coming up with a name for a comic. Then there was the synopsis. And it's just working through, and like everyone can have a go. And then there's votes, and then you know, it's just having fun. And you'll get, and we'll send out some goodies if you win, if you come top of the class, as it were.
Yeah. So the person who named it, he won a book. I sent it to him.
Yeah.
So the person who wins a synopsis will win something. So you'll win something as we go along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can't win anything, so we're not getting involved. We're just enjoying seeing all you lovely people. Get involved and just have some fun. So there you go. And we hope you enjoyed this episode as well. So if there's anything you want us to talk about, any events or you know book launches or anything that we need to know about, or potential digital conventions that might be going forward in the future, you might hear some more about that.
Oh, big news next week
in the near future. So stay tuned to this.
One of our favourite people next week, guys.
That's what you say every week, though, Tony.
when it's the three of us.
Every guest is our favourite guest. Apart from you, Kat, because you're the best. Email us awesomecomicspod.
Not Dave White, though, not him.
No.
Not him.
he knows
I love him.
He's going to get us back. Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com if there's anything we didn't need to know. Correct. Maybe I murdered your name when trying to pronounce it. Let me know. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be announcing guests or just talking about stuff or retweeting comics positivity, because that's what we need more of. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Like I said, there's that great community on Facebook called Awesome Comics Talk, all one word. Search for it. If you want to join in, there's a couple of simple questions. Do you listen to the show? What comics are you reading?
We've had quite a few people who haven't filled that in recently.
No one fucking answers that.
If you haven't answered the question and you get turned away, it's purely because we don't want any bots or just people who don't care getting through. This is a lovely community of people that are just talking about comics and just having fun on there. So
yeah,
please join us. And thank you for joining us this week, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about this show and the comics we talk about and anything in general. We're on loads of networks as well. I mean, maybe you listen to us on Spotify. Thank you for that. And what other networks are we on? Like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are you on, Tony?
Pod Ecclesiastical.
There's a safe word.
There it is.
There it is. And I mean, it's a surprise ending because I didn't think he was the one that was going to say it.
I never say the safe word, baby.
You know, like if someone's going to do a put in the cinema and you're in the seats, why not go in the popcorn box as opposed to on the floor? That's fucking grim.
What?
Just occurred to him. Maybe they wanted to finish their popcorn.
No, it's wrong. Damn it.
Have you been thinking about that for 45 minutes?
I was actually thinking
about the scooping it up with the empty popcorn box. Might be something we could adopt with dog walkers. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Eat some popcorn.
I'm glad he cut out then, because God knows what Dan.
Someone's left their popcorn behind. Oh no!
Oh, no. They've left Maltesers in there. Anyway,
melted Skittles. Let's get a Snickers bar. Now let's move on.
Because we've got a lovely guest this week, and like she's got to listen to this. Thank you for joining us, Kat. Where can people find you and your work and your great books, etc.?
Well, you can find me on Instagram. I'm Katriona Chapman. It's spelled K-A-T-R-I-O-N-A. Weird spelling, I know. And I'm Kat Chapman on Twitter. And my books are available from Avery Hill's website, averyhillpublishing.com. And my website is katrinachapman.com.
There you go. Nice and simple. But I'll still put
I was just going to say thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for putting up with all the shit that we've been talking for the party. I mean,
she goes off the route about 9:15.
Yeah. But you're
just be prepared to tomorrow when people say you went on that again.
Oh dear. Anyway, thank you for joining us, Kat. It was awesome, and we love the book. Tony, where can people find you online, etc.?
Tributepress.bigcartel.com for all my not safe for work comics. Okay.
Lovely. Dan Butcher.
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can be Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
There you go. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo, where I'll either be doodling something funny, take a picture of Kat, or using a Snapchat filter that I just can't get enough of.
My God, you're addicted to those fucking filters. They do make me laugh.
Reface. We've been using that.
The latest Reface is a Gangnam Style, Dan.
I did my face on the old Joker the other day, and it looked all right.
There was a T2 one. Did you do the Terminator one? Because you fit perfectly for that.
I missed that. No, I didn't do that. I was scanned back.
Yeah.
Just handing your faces over to the Russian government.
Well, you know. There's so much I could say then. There's all the... but instead, we're just going to say, have a lovely week, folks. We hope wherever you are or whatever you're doing, you're healthy, you're happy. And you're just staying positive in these crazy times.
Yeah.
But there's always comics to read. Just remember that. So go forth, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics, create loads of comics. And from all of us here, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Kat, you let us down.
They bully me into saying it, Kat. I'm not going to do that for you.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right, good. Bye, everyone.
That was bad.
Bye. See you later.
I just need to know, the baby mice were all right though, weren't they? Were they all right?
Sorry, Vince.
What?
Well,
what?
Yes, he put them in a little box and he took them to a wildlife centre.
Oh.
And they raised them. So.
Oh, as their own.
Thank God. I was really worried then for a moment.